You're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Centre. For more information, visit www.lmc.org.au.
So today we continue with my third talk on my life's journey and some of the lessons from it. And today I'll be talking about my time at the Royal Military College, Duntroon. That was a four-year course to train officers for our permanent army. And I went in 1934, graduated in 1937. I was 17 when I went in and 21 years old when I came out. Apart from some of the Second World War experiences, it was one of the toughest times of my life, but also one of the most wonderful times. I've always appreciated the opportunity I had for those 4 years of training. I loved them, and they are very happy memories. The course was tough and was meant to be tough. The class, the senior class when I went in, the ones in their fourth year, they were five strong out of the 20 that went in. 15 of them had been expelled over the previous 3 years. One reason for expulsion was failing in exams. We had 28 subjects over the 4 years, and if you failed in either a civil or a military subject over those 4 years, whether they were term exams or annual yearly exams, if you failed in any one subject, you were out. And so it was tough. You were very motivated. Unfortunately, in that senior year, in my first year in, one of those five cadets, a sergeant, at a sports affair to which we were allowed to bring guests, brought his girlfriend along, and she wanted to see the room he lived in. It was a strict order, no females allowed in the cadet's quarters. But she pressed him, so he took her up just to have a look in and out. There wouldn't have been more than 2 minutes in the building, but the oversight got to hear of it, and he was immediately expelled. Been there 3.5 of the 4 years. But I understand it. It was quite correct, because if after 3.5 years he couldn't obey orders, what would he be like in wartime? So it was a correct decision without any doubt. How am I going to talk about Duntroon in these few minutes? I don't know. So I think I'll do what I did last time and thanks, dear. And let's tell you some stories, then we'll look at some lessons. We'll start off in the dining room. The dining room had tables of 8 cadets, and on each table would be one or two of the first year, the newcomers. We had to sit at the table at attention. Sitting at the table at attention on the front of the chair, right on the front at attention. We were not allowed to turn our heads left or right. If someone spoke to us, the tendency is to look to them. If you did that, you're disobeying orders. There's a penalty. You couldn't turn your eyes right or left or up or down. So again, if someone spoke to you, you couldn't look at them. You had to learn to control yourself. If you wanted to eat, you picked your knife and fork up, put it in your mouth, put them down, back to attention, and you had to chew 20 times. There was a corporal on the table whose job it was to check you every now and then. You never knew when you were being checked. So if you were only chewed 19 times or 21 times, disobedience, penalty. Now, the penalty at the table, I'm stiff, I can't get out of it. The penalty at the table was each table had a small wooden box on it, and there was a young cadet, a junior cadet, who had to keep two live moths in that box. And there were plenty of moths at the old barracks, over 100 years old then, and down in the basement you could always find moths. So we always had this box of moths on each table. And if you disobeyed by turning your head or turning your eyes or not chewing 20 times, you had to eat a moth. Now, it doesn't sound too much to eat a moth, but their wings are covered with a very fine powder, and that goes right across the top of your mouth and into your throat and dries it up completely. When you chew the moth, it's not like chewing meat, it's all slime. And that goes over this powder, and you can't swallow. And so you just have to sit there at attention until you get enough saliva to be able to swallow the dear little moth. Very unpleasant, I can assure you. I've eaten many moths. Then our rooms. We each had a single room. It consisted of a single bed, army style, a small table, a hard chair, and a wardrobe. In the wardrobe, we had to have our clothes folded on each shelf at a specific width, and we were given a tape measure when we came into the college to do this with. So our singlets had to be 9 inches folded exactly, our shirts 12 inches. Everything had its measurements. And once every week, the sergeant of the block, that's the senior class, the sergeant had 8 bedrooms in his block. Once a week, he would examine your room, and it had to be perfect. Now, we didn't know what day he would examine it. He didn't have a regular day, just when he felt like it. And if you didn't have a perfect room, you were on defaulters the next morning. Defaulters was being on parade at 5:30, where one of the sergeants marched you up and down the parade ground until 6 o'clock, which was reveille. I'll come back to the parade ground in a minute. So having been on the parade ground on and on and on and on, week after week, I was determined I was going to get that room perfect. And I really did work at it. I gave it my best. The lino on the floor was like a mirror. The bed had to be perfectly square, and it was. All of the clothes were exact in their widths. Everything was perfect, I felt. I knew all the old tricks by then. The cords by which your electric light hung, they could be dusty, they were all clean. The shade over the light that has dust on it. I learned all the tricks. The top of the wardrobe door, if you rub your finger along in this dusty, dirty room. So I knew all the tricks by then, and I had the room perfect. Oh, was I pleased. Sergeant comes in, examines the room, and he can't find anything wrong. Goes to the door, he opens the door, and you know when you turn the handle of a door, there's this little bolt that goes into the side of the door and comes out. It locks the door. What would you call that? Latch, the latch that goes in and out. So he opened the door, let the handle go, the latch came out, rubbed his finger along the top of the latch. Filthy room, defaulters in the morning. Ah, dear, I'd worked so hard. But the lesson that they intended to teach you there, of course, was that you never give up. If you've got a goal, got a purpose, then you persevere regardless of the disappointments, the failures, the situations which might occur that stop you getting there. You never give up, never give up, never give up. You persevere until you achieve that goal to which you are aiming. Very good lesson. In winter time, well, I better go back to the square for a minute, the parade ground. It was a long parade ground, I don't know how long, I suppose about the width of the chapel. And the sergeant stood in front of a small cenotaph, and we marched at 20-inch paces. That's a very short pace. That's because in wartime you're carrying heavy weights, and a shorter step helps your backbone. And so we marched at 20 inches, and they knew exactly the number of paces to go to each end of the parade ground. We had a 25-pound pack on. Everything had to be perfectly clean. Pack had to be perfectly square, so we had pieces of wood in there to make it square. And every button and belt shining, your shoes like glass to look into, the rifle spotless. And so you were examined very thoroughly. If you weren't turned out perfectly, you're on defaulters the next morning again. So you'd get up somewhere between 4:30 and 5 to make sure you were perfect for the parade ground. Now, if it was the sergeant would march you up and down for 30 minutes, and they took a delight in getting you close to the edge. Now, this end, the edge of the parade ground, there was a grassy slope for about 6 feet and grass at the bottom. That end, nothing. And they'd march you right about 2 feet from the end and then about turn, and just in time to get the order to turn. This day, it was foggy. When it was foggy there, it could be very foggy. Perhaps not see more than 8 or 10 feet in front of you. So I'd been going up and down, and the sergeant would see me go past him, and then I'd disappear in the fog. Everything was wet. And this particular time, I was just getting toward the end. I had about 2 feet to go. I was waiting for the about, because they loved to get you as close as they could to the edge. But the about did not come. And I had a second to think. Was I going to disobey orders and stop and turn around myself? Or was I going to go over the edge? At that stage, I had a keen memory of what happens when you disobey orders. I stepped over the edge, rolled down the slope of my 25-pound pack onto the grass at the bottom. Just as I hit the grass, I hear, about turn. So I scrambled up the slope. You can imagine what I was like, green all over, marching back. When I got opposite the sergeant, halt, right turn, ground arm. Come, looks at me, filthy clothes on parade. Defaulters tomorrow morning. Shoulder arms, left turn, quick march, and away I went again. Now, that sort of situation doesn't harbour great love in your heart. But the idea was, of course, first of all, obedience, to see if you would obey. But the main object of that exercise was to teach you that life was not always fair. That a lot of unfair things will happen to you in your life. And that was another very good lesson. You see, the senior class had permission to teach us these things. It's all laid down in a book. No bullying. My first year there, I experienced no bullying and no wrong attitudes. I was dealt with perfectly justly. So that's important to realize there was a purpose behind each one of these things. That purpose was life is not always fair. And when it's not fair to you, don't grizzle and groan, complain, criticize, but get your head up, keep going and go through that problem on top, not underneath. Don't let it affect your attitudes, but keep good attitudes and stay in victory. A very good lesson. Favourite sport in the... Well, not favourite, our sport in wintertime was rugby union and boxing. Rugby union I liked very much. In fact, after I graduated, I was appointed to barracks in Melbourne. I played rugby union for Melbourne for 1 year. I loved rugby union. I didn't love boxing. We had to box, but I didn't like it. I don't like a sport where you know you're going to get hurt before you start. Now, on the football field, if you were damaged, you might have a broken collarbone or a broken rib or whatever, and you're lying there, the cadets all come from around the oval to opposite to where you were lying and say, "Get up, Nelson, get up, Nelson, get up, Nelson, get up, Nelson," until you're staggered to your feet. You had to learn to stand up. What they were teaching you was to stand up inside. But by standing up on the outside, that was one way to train you. And you had to stand up, then you could collapse and a stretch of ears would come and get you. If you couldn't, of course, sometimes you couldn't. So after they'd given you a fair chance, they'd come and get you. But the lesson was you must stand up regardless of the crises and the tragedies, the hurts, the frustrations, the wounds of life. You've got to learn to stand up inside and go through on top and not let that circumstance overwhelm you. Another very good lesson. On the sports field, as an athlete, we used to have contests with the other Royal Military Colleges. There's one in England, Sandhurst, one in Canada, one in South Africa, and Duntroon in Australia. And we used to have contests. We didn't get together too far apart, but everything was timed. This particular time, our athletic season was on, and we were having a contest together. And I was a miler, and I was running the mile, and I was the favourite for the mile. And, of course, other cadets were running from our college with me. But I was the one who they pinned their hopes on. And just before we lined up for the mile, which was those days, was four times around the oval, and that was marked with a white line, of course, to get the distance accurately. So I had four times round for the mile. And just before we lined up, General Laverack, the commandant of the college, a tall, very good-looking man. We wore uniforms all the time. He looked tremendous in his uniform, three rows of medals from the First World War, and he was a great-looking, great man. I served under him later in the battle for Syria. And he came up to me just before we got on our marks, and he said, "Oxley, you are to run round the first three times at your top speed, and then for the fourth time, you will increase your speed and win." Yes, sir. Well, now, those people do laugh when I tell that story. But actually, it's a very accurate story. I did exactly what he said. I went round the first three times at my top speed, and then I increased for the last time round, and I did not win. I won for our college, but not for the other colleges. And you might say, well, that's impossible. Oh, no, it's not. There's always that little reserve, that little bit of effort left in you, even when you've had it, you're exhausted, and you have no energy left. There's always that little bit. I know that's true. I've been trying it on Jill for 30 years, and it works. You see, if you're in the battle zone, your men have been without food for perhaps 3 days, you've been in constant action, you're having a break, both sides are exhausted and have pulled back, and no one's got any energy left, and you're suddenly ordered to attack again. And you know those men have had it. But if they respect you, and the key to leadership is having respect, not having control, not having authority, that's not leadership. Leadership's gaining the respect of your men. And if you've got their respect, you say, come on, fellas, we've got to attack again. There's a little bit left in each one of us. Come on, let's use it. Up you get, and they'll respond and they'll come. There's always a little bit left. Another story along the same lines, it was in water sports, again between those four colleges. And we'd done a whole lot of things. I was a very keen swimmer. I had my bronze medal for life-saving. I had my silver medal for life-saving. And we'd done a lot of things. I was already pretty tired. And then I had to swim out to a boat they had out about half a mile out, and they drop a dummy in the water. You've got to go and rescue the dummy. And you're dressed, so you've got to take your coat off, your boots off, your trousers and your coat. Yeah, the rest of you just dive in because seconds make a difference. Swim out to that boat, dive, for the dummy's weighted, find the fellow, the dummy at the bottom, bring him up, and then keeping his head above water, bring him back to the beach through the surf. It was the Coogee, and they have public baths at the foot of the cliff cut out of the rock. Quite a big bath, swimming pool. And when the surf, when the tide's in, the surf breaks over the edge of the rocks into the pool, and it's very rough in the pool. So I brought my man in, rescued him. Then we had an 880-yard race. Excuse me, please. along the beach, 880 yards is a very hard race, I think. And then into the pool, and I can't remember how many times we had to go up and down the pool. But I started off, excuse me, and I felt I couldn't swim, but I knew I had to. And somehow or other, I got to the last lap, and I couldn't go. I was no longer horizontal in the water. When you're swimming, you're horizontal. I was upright and just... I was pretty close to drowning. I really was. I'd had it. And General Laverick, and he was a cavalryman, and he used to wear these beautiful leather boots up to his knees, highly polished. And he came along the wall of the baths where the surf was coming in. I can remember to this day the surf splashing over these beautiful boots. And he came to where I was. And he bent down And he said, Oxley, if you don't finish, may the heavens help you. And he proved that point, that there is a little bit always left. I got horizontal and I finished the lap. They had to pull me out, but I finished the lap. So once again, that same story, there is always a little bit left. Don't give up. You never give up. What's that? 30 minutes already. 20 minutes. 30. You serious? Okay.
32.
Okay, very quick one. We had horses. Each one had his own horse. Cavalry was in then. In my first year, my dream, my vision was a cavalry charge. I loved horses. I'm addicted to horses. I really do love them, love riding. And my vision was a cavalry charge, 1,000 good cavalrymen behind you at the full gallop with lances for action. And you're out in front with your sword up, galloping into action. Oh, I thought, oof, that was a vision. What a stupid vision. If we had horses today, my vision would be 1,000 good men, full gallop into action, and me behind encouraging them. The old sergeant major who taught us to ride, very quickly he used to say, young gentlemen, be careful you don't hurt my horses. And we had to be careful we didn't hurt his horses. So we learnt to ride with the reins in our teeth so that you learn to move with the horse. Because if you don't, when he stretches forward, then the bit hurts his, can make the mouth very sore. So at the walk, at the trot and the canter, we had reins in our teeth for a beginning. So we learnt how to move. In the last year in the riding school, we had to go over 3 jumps, no reins tied on the neck, no stirrups crossed on the horse's neck, and taking your coat off. That's 3 jumps, riding with your knees, because the first jump, any horse will do the first jump. Second jump's hard for the horse when they're so close to each other, so you've got to guide him with your legs and knees. And so no stirrups, no reins, 3 jumps and taking your coat off. First overhead, please. Here it is. It took me a long time before I could do that, and I had many falls. That's going over the 3 jumps. You won't see it here, but the stirrups and the reins are on the neck of the horse, and that's my coat that's being taken off. So I loved horses, but you get a lot of hurt to do all the things you want to do. We were taught to look after, thank you, our horses. How much time have we got now?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, next one, please.
7 minutes.
7 minutes. Okay, here are some of the lessons from Duntroon. I could write another 9 just as easily. The 2 basic factors which were drummed into us every day for 4 years. To live a disciplined life, we've already spoken about that, and obedience. A disciplined life and obedience. I can't talk about any of these. These are just the lessons. Thirdly, learning to stand up inside in the crises of life. Fourthly, never give up, never, never, never give up. Persevere till you achieve your aims. Fifthly, loyalty. No time to talk about it. Sixthly, remember that life is going to have a lot of unfair things happen to you. Keep your attitudes right and just go through them. Number seven, character building. That was a lot of time spent on that. Become a man of honor, become a man of integrity, become a man of high moral standards, and a clean man, clean outside and inside. That's one of the reasons you could be removed from the college if your character wasn't correct. Next one was the being fit. You've got to keep yourself fit if you're going to be efficient. And lastly, care for your men. You look after your men before you think of yourself. Any time left? Have I? Bit suspicious of her. Next heading. Next overhead. At the next one? I just thought I'd talk very quickly about obedience. It's such an important thing. I know I talked about it in the previous two talks. But we never avoid it. As a child, if we obey, there's harmony. If we disobey, there's disharmony. All mothers said amen. When you're at school, if you obey, you'll make progress. If you disobey, you'll fail and life's not so good. At work, if you obey the rules, you will progress and get promotion. If you disobey, you will be caused dissatisfaction and probably get the sack. As a married person, obeying the word of God is so important because obeying God's marriage laws brings that harmonious unity, which is so beautiful. Disobeying his laws causes division and often separation. As a citizen, if you obey the laws of the country, you live in peace and security. If you disobey them, you'll probably end up in a law court. As a Christian, if you obey the word of God, well, Deuteronomy 28 tells it all. And there the word says that if we obey the word, then we will be blessed. And there's a list of blessings. And if you disobey the word, you will be cursed. And there's a list of the curses. And if you're one of those who believes that the cross got rid of Deuteronomy 28, you better talk to me afterwards, because that's not true. In a lifetime, obedience or disobedience brings good or bad results. It's as simple as that. There's no area of your life when obedience is not an essential part of your living. And obedience requires a decision. It's a choice, and it's your choice. You personally choose whether you're going to be an obedient person or not. And obedience will bring to you gain, and disobedience will always bring to you loss. God bless you. Thank you, Pastor.